Good evening, everyone. Welcome. And my name is Roland Cohen. I'm the, Director of Practice and Education for the Longmont Group. And it's my pleasure to introduce Barbara Smith, who is a longtime senior teacher within Shambhala. And she's a close student of the founder of Shambhala, Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche. So we're very, very honored to have her. And she's also been the previous director of Shambhala training in Boulder and held many other posts within Shambhala. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is quite a pleasure to be here, actually. Roland was saying how I've had a variety of posts through the last 45 years in my personal journey on the Buddhist path. And I was realizing that the probably the most, I wouldn't say pleasurable, but partly pleasurable and maybe fruitful is the word, has been in small forming centers like this one, all over the place, really, because they are in some way the situations that I have found. When people come in, into a center like this and it's already feels, even though it's small, it feels very established, you know. And so they might not really understand that it's kind of like a movie set, you know. that when people leave, the people take down the banners and stack up the cushions in the corner. And I remember when I first went to do one post in which I worked with a lot of the people here at Shambhala training in Boulder. I myself didn't completely understand that, you know, that there was nobody behind the screen, in fact. because the actual environment is so simple that it has an elegance to it, that the environment itself is so pure in that way, that it's not all gunked up with other people's neurosis smeared on it. And at the same time, people don't often realize, because of that simplicity and purity, it has a sense of elegance and richness. But it also has a sense that it must be simple when you start to study it, and maybe don't realize the amount of work that goes into that kind of purity, that kind of the effort. And then even if you come and you go and you think, well, the situation is very clean, and then when you go to look at it, actually it might be quite funky on some level. You know, you go back in the daytime and it's, you know, it's not that, it's kind of scruffy and the walls are clearly in need of paint and the floor maybe is dusty in the corner. But there's something about the purity of the intention and the good-heartedness and the openness of the situation that feels kind and simple. So it's almost like taking it for granted on some level, which becomes really the environment of the teachings, or in some ways is the teachings. When most of us, anyway, if you can think back, when you come to look at meditation as potential in your life, it might seem very complicated. And then, you know, as you go along, like most things, it becomes easier, more natural. And you find that you maybe can't even remember. This very often happens. So I think most of you have a lot of experience. So I'm trying to frame this for the people with less experience that once, sometimes we don't remember. We don't actually remember the difference between the benefits that we've gotten from meditating and well, why bother? You know, if I just take it off the charts for a while. And what we find tends to happen is that perhaps it's been a very subtle change, so we don't really even notice, you know, the quality of openness happening to us. So then when the light changes, we don't necessarily notice that either. So sometimes we might think that the people who are very dramatic in their off and on switches, right? Like some people might feel like that about themselves, that they're either very, and I think that the when we look at states of mind, what we're working with obviously in terms of meditation are states of mind. So when we come to meditation and we think, well, I want to improve my feelings, you know, I want to improve my state of mind, I want to improve my quality of life, and so on and so on. And so if we have good teachings, we'll hear that might not necessarily be how we experience it. But what we experience is most valuable in its reality, that we experience things in a more real way. So that sense of actually what you could call, or what we call coming down to earth, for some people might have a very dramatic quality. Might be a very, like, you know, falling out of a window and landing, you know, like in a dream where you land and like that. And then the sense of being elevated is very much kind of the exact opposite, that we're falling again, but this time we're flying. So the sense of finding the openness really is what the meditation, you could say, is most useful in. Not so much when we talk about the middle way, is not having those extremes, but staying in the middle, but allowing those extremes, as you see. I mean, people have probably heard this already. I know some of you have said it yourselves 1,000 times. So sometimes we might actually think of the people who, you know, if we're the type that has the extremes of the highs and the lows, we might think, well, if only I was a more, you know, or what would you call it?
Balanced.
Yeah, that's what people like to think, right? Person. Then I'd be happier. But if you're a more balanced person, you might feel like, well, I'm kind of a wishy-washy person, and I really prefer to have the highs and the lows. But the quality of the meditation, as we go along, we begin to find that really you can't judge those things as good or bad. It's not of any real benefit. But we begin to find that the ability to relate to the quality of the actual reality of our lives, the solidity, the earthiness, the element of earth, in terms of coming down to earth. Like when we begin meditation, that's the first thing we do, right? Is to relate to our body. So in many kinds of meditation, it seems to be, comes in and out of fashion too, and yoga certainly does. I was sitting here remembering, you know, going back to remembering one of my first experiences was teaching a yoga class in a bed and breakfast in Dumfries, Scotland in 1970. So that was, you know, an odd place and time to be teaching yoga in some ways, but it was certainly becoming then, it was that, you know, there was a height of popularity, which seems to circle around. And I've noticed that over the years, that meditation kind of tags along behind that crest of that, usually, in popularity. And The staying power of the meditation is slightly different in that the highs and the lows and the feelings of being healthy or unhealthy are kind of all included in the fundamental sense of the well-being. So this, the quality of well-being in terms of meditation practice is just as pithy, if you will, when you're sick and when you're maybe, hopefully, you'll have that when you're dying, a sense of actual well-being that isn't based on any kind of pleasure and doesn't seek for pleasure or reject pain. So over time, the sense of those highs and the lows or the mediocrity and all of that being included in one's general sense of healthiness is what could be in itself, I think, a fruition of the meditation. But it's also kind of fundamentally the background for, or the ground, you could say, maybe, of being not rejecting and not defending, not rejecting and not defending yourself, becomes the ground for actual, the idea at least, of becoming an enlightened person, which is quite extraordinary, really, if you think about it. I mean, we have maybe all kinds of ideas about what enlightenment is, but in fact, the very simple act of accepting ourselves is the path towards meditation is the path towards enlightenment. And in a way that the very simplest thing, the most obvious thing, and that what I just talked about is like just being with your body, the first stage of meditation or mindfulness, right? Mindfulness of body has that sense of allowing all those thoughts to become what the Trungpa Rinpoche used to call flat-bottomed thoughts. Remember that analogy, the flat-bottomed thoughts? So when you sit with your flat bottom, just in, as a, you know, what we call a stone Buddha, if you will, in the Zen tradition, is like that quality. So even if our whole nervous system is kind of twitchy, the twitchiness is kind of becomes apparent as a thought, right? We become aware that our whole manifestation is something that we thought up. And so as we sit with ourselves, we begin to actually allow that. That's just, there's space for that, the twitchiness or the horror or the boredom. It all becomes something that just by allowing ourselves becomes kind of like it runs aground. But not running aground in a dead or sleepy way, but, you know, coming completely to ground in the quality of patience. And that's the actual mindfulness of body, in that sense, is the first of the four foundations of mindfulness. So that what's called the psychosomatic body, which is the posturing body, you know, the body that we, our imaginary body. I mean, at some point it might be sophisticated into an inner body or a subtle body, but the original, just the psychosomatic body, is what we're holding on with. And so when we sit and just allow the actual earth body, the body as we call it, not the body, the me body, my body, but what the one that will eventually be the dead body, to penetrate into our awareness, then we actually have that kind quality of well-being, of letting go, of actually letting go of everything that we hold on to. And that touch and go, that's the second foundation of mindfulness, the mindfulness of survival is what it's called, mindfulness of life. It's just to feel that sense of we're always struggling, you know, so instead of struggling with the struggling, to allow the struggling to be helpful to our meditation. So the sense of trying, constantly trying to do something, you know, becomes part of the meditation. And we feel that, we just have a sense of that, you know, and then, okay, I got it, let go. Got it, let go. This is all inner, I'm sort of doing the little, you know. But, you know, you can feel yourself doing that sometimes, which, what am I trying to do? Okay, it doesn't matter, let it go, you know. Oh, I got it, okay, let it go. That sense of we're always, okay, that's fine, it's fine. That's what's going on, that's fine. And then touch on that with the wakefulness and let it go. And come back to the technique. And from there, that the quality of the mindfulness of effort arises, which has a sense that we just find ourselves suddenly there. And we don't have to analyze it. We just have that experience of being suddenly awake. And to maintain that as a respectful part of our existence, because it always happens. And we usually struggle so desperately to fill up those gaps, right? That's where the process of ego actually becomes exhausting, because we're not used to the space, so that the quality of just suddenly being awake is part of it. That's the mindfulness of effort, or it's the sudden jerk. And then the mindfulness, the fourth foundation of mindfulness, is mindfulness of mind, which is simply having a sense of things happen one at a time. So we might often think that we're doing a bunch of things at once, but in fact, we're just doing one thing and then another very quickly and going do, 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 like that. We're never, there is no such thing in this tradition as multitasking. It just doesn't exist. There's just a this and this back, going back and forth. So we begin to get a sense of the flow of our minds. It's not that we can't do that. And this is also moving into what I'm talking in terms of not just the sitting meditation, but the post-meditation. But we could just sort of relax, because we're not really ever going to split in two. That's not going to happen. The sense of just being with yourself and then with yourself, and begins to be, okay, so there's a wang, 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 and then you see that and touch on it, so that all, let it go and come back to your body, come back to your breath, so that all four foundations of mindfulness are a coordinated unit. And part of the reason that happens is because we can allow ourselves, at some point, we begin to see that we can allow ourselves to just really let go, dissipate, fall apart. So that there's a sense of letting go and finding that your mind comes back. Mindfulness is possible because it's mind's nature to come back. We don't really have to work so hard to coordinate our mind and our body. They are, as long as we're alive, inclined to be together. That's their inclination. So much of the problem we have with our mind and our body is the fear of one has of the other. You know, people tend to identify more with, well, I am my body, and this crazy mind thing has to be watched all the time, you know, it's going to just drag me away. Or we think this, you know, lazy body really, you know, is not, it's not like, why didn't I get the Cadillac, you know? But in fact, it's all good. This, you know, our system's good. It's inclined to work. And so much of the meditation is a lot, just simply allowing that to happen, the things to happen. I'm trying to remember a quote. I was going to look in the book to see, but I don't think I'm on the right page for it. So I'll just try to remember. It was the instead of seeing, what we begin to see is the meditation is not, thank you, it's not a project that's extraordinary. It's actually quite natural. That as we begin to become more alive, then the meditation just becomes a natural part. So in a way, it's like the discipline to meditate is simply, doing yourself a favor. You see yourself kind of getting sloppy or whatever, so you straighten up. And you see yourself getting too uptight, you relax. So it becomes a natural thing to do. And in the process, maybe we begin to meditate in groups like this because we feel the support is good. But then, as soon as we sort of feel like we don't need that, you begin to realize that the other people need your support. So that's a natural part of the human process.
I just wanted to say that one thing John Rockwell said was, it's kind of like brushing your teeth. If you feel that kind of weird fuzz and stuff, then you brush them. So if you feel that same sort of inner fuzz or whatever, then you meditate.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. And partly maybe if you think back or if you have children, that it's sort of maybe an imposition to begin with, right, to brush your teeth. So that's all I was, since we're sitting this way, I always am inclined to think that I'm just saying things to initiate a conversation. So that's kind of what I had in mind, was the four foundations of mindfulness. Does anybody else, Elaine, do you want to say anything about them?
That's my favorite teaching.
Okay. You sent me, I must have gotten a message on the radar, mm-hmm. Right?
There's one part, do you remember the part about that?
Yes.
Where mm-hmm. he talks about, and I can't remember which, maybe it's the mindfulness of hurt. It's like, and he talks about when you see your lover.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is like that. Could you say something about that?
I think you just did. I mean, it just happens.
Effortless effort.
Yeah, effortless effort. Or maybe we could talk more about the whole notion of effort in that sense. If the effort is the word, that mindfulness of effort in the meditation tradition is slightly used differently than effort as trying really hard to do something. The effort is almost like trying not to try, it's not trying, it's simply pulling, alignment, creating alignment. What's another way to put it, Roland?
Letting it happen.
Letting it happen. But there's a little bit of...
And I think the idea of...
Dance. It's like a dance, right?
Yeah. Right, so that's where the idea of the image of the lover
right.
comes in, because it's not an effort to figure out which of those people is the familiar loved one.
Right. Or which of those do you think you could put up with?
Yes. Some things are self... What is it like? Self-evident.
Yes.
So yeah, it comes with the whole notion of being not so much that you're going to find things that you like more than you ever could imagine, but you're going to find you will find even the bad tastes are even worse than you thought. but there's a quality of the depth of realness that has what he describes in an overall way is the well-being or even joy, even in the worst of it.
Right.
So that might be like a horror show on some level.
Ah! And is this similar to like intuition, what you're talking about? Like that?
It's more like you, it's a shock, more like a gasp, where you gasp. Like when you come around the corner and, there's a parade,
uh-huh.
Like that.
Could you say that actually, because we're talking about the third level, that the first two are sort of the nitty-gritty of it, and when you actually kind of get it, that your body is flat-bottomed and your thoughts are flat-bottomed and you don't have to hold on to them, that's when you have that.
It does seem like it has to be, there has to be some, that's what actually made me think of it at all, was talking about, to begin with, was the space in the room. Mm-hmm. There has to be, like, so the willingness, and the, yeah, so it's not like it's you're a victim of it.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, you know, also, if I may, the effort thing is so interesting to me, because it seems you do have to make whatever effort you have to make to practice, you know, whatever version that is, you make that effort. And then in the process of making that effort, you realize you're making too much effort, and then, which is actually covering over something, and then you kind of recognize you have to relax. So it's really not too tight, not too loose. It's that you go to one side and you go to the other side, and then you realize you don't need to do either. You're actually right here. But somehow you do have to do something to realize that. But once you realize it, then you realize you have to let go of trying. So you go back and forth until finally, you know, you are kind of stuck in the middle of not, you know, of just like you said, being amazed by something, you know, just sort of be, you can't really go this way or that way. It's just sort of, everything wakes you up. It wakes you up, just.
But first you have to try.
You have to try in the beginning.
There has to be that initial.
That's right.
For me, if I'm not meditating, well, if I am meditating, there's just a joy and equanimity that comes from being with the breath. Or who knows if I'm actually being with the breath all the time. But I'm sitting here, and I sit in the meditation posture, and my intention is to work with the breath. And no doubt, I am sometimes with the breath. And I'm also with my mind, and just my body. And for me, that's where it comes from, that sense of, there's a different quality of reward in life. I don't need to get the MacBook Pro, although I did.